Right, let's get started here. So I gave out the second to last packet last time, but we really barely started it because I got caught up in the whole brachos issue, brachos mitzvah, different kinds of brachos. Again, we could talk about brachos forever. We could spend the rest of the summer or more talking about brachos, but that's not what we're here to do. So let's go on a little bit of hilchos mezuzah. I believe we mentioned last time the discussion, the two days in the Shita Mekubetzes, in regards to a place that a person doesn't actually live in all the time, where the Shita Mekubetzes quotes Rabbeinu Yohanan and a Ritva. So the Shita Mekubetzes quotes it in Bava Metzia, quotes from a Ritva that you have to own it and live in it in order to be chayv in mezuzah. If you own it but do not live in it, it's chovas hadar. That's the lashon in the Gemara, that it's chovas hadar, and therefore only if a person lives in the house is it chayv in mezuzah. If you don't live there, even if you own it, you're not chayv in mezuzah. So we pointed out that the Magen Avraham seems to assume that way as well, because the Magen Avraham says the only reason you make a bracha when you put the mezuzah, the only time that's appropriate to make a bracha is when you put the mezuzah up with a bracha is when you move into the house. If you put the mezuzahs up before you moved into the house, so says Magen Avraham, again he quoted the Rayas from Hilchot Tzitzis, but says Magen Avraham, if you put the mezuzahs up before you move into the house, so then you don't make the bracha until you move in. Obviously, the Magen Avraham understanding very clearly, chovas hadar, that it's a chiv on the person living in the house. Just about, totally tangentially, having absolutely nothing to do with Hilchos Mezuzah at all, but just for 5 minutes, for those who were here last summer, who remember the Tzvilas Kelim Shurim, just reminding me, the Magen Avraham will bring rayas from Hilchos Tzitzis. I saw a gevaldika raya from Hilchos Tzitzis in the Indian Tzvilas Kelim, which nogeya to all of us, that I didn't know last summer. Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva, that he said every week Rav Asher Weiss gives a shiur on a different topic, somehow related to the parsha, and they write it up immediately and they send it out in an email form. Sometimes they send out like last year's shiur, but they send it out in an email, all written up beautifully. And sometimes at the end they have shil sechuvos that he had written on related topics. So this past week, Parshas Matos, we have Milchemes Midyan, and therefore we have all the halachos that go along with Milchemes Midyan, so we have Tvilas Kalim. So he has a few tshuvas, Tvilas Kalim related. So again, totally off the topic. This, I guess if I had more 10-minute halacha slots, I would do this as a 10-minute halacha shir. It's 5 minutes. Give me 5 minutes. There is a discussion in Poskim about toveling. I get the shaila literally... I don't know how many times, but a lot. I got it today. I got it just today, and I got it 2 days ago also. And it comes up all the time. When it comes to electrical appliances, like a hot water urn, a George Foreman grill, a sandwich maker, a coffee pot, and anything, any electrical appliance, Keurig machine, whatever, any electrical appliances that are used in the kitchen, do you need to do Tevilas Kelim on them? So the one shita that I always was aware of that I really didn't like at all is the shita of the Chalkas Yaakov, where the Chalkas Yaakov says, no need for Tevilas Kelim because... it's mechuber lekarka. Why is it mechuber lekarka? Because the only way it works is when you plug it into the wall. So it's mechuber lekarka. So we quoted that last summer, and I think I explained why I thought that was a little bit crazy. I didn't really, I thought that was a, I shouldn't say a little bit crazy. I thought it was a bit of a chiddush. I thought it was a bit more of a chiddush than I was willing to rely on. But I mentioned that one time I bought a hot water urn. I toveled it because everyone said, tovel it, leave it for 4 days, let it dry out, and it will be fine. It will be no problem. So I toveled it, I let it dry out for 4 days, and it was broken. And I didn't have the chutzpah to go back to the store and say, look, you sold me a bad hot water, and it doesn't work. Because, they probably went to thought to say, well, did you dunk it in water? but obviously, I saw stuff dripping out of places where wires go, and, obviously it wasn't... The toveling may have had something to do with the breaking of the urn, is what I'm trying to say. So I bought a replacement at the time, and I asked Rav David Weinberger if I have to tovel it. And he said, if it breaks, you don't have to tovel it. And I thought that was strange also. Where's there a din that if your kli will break from toveling, that you don't have to tovel it? If it's a klei mateches or a klei zechuchis, it requires tevila. So I would have said, if you can't tovel it, so then you can't use it. You can't have one. So who says that they don't have to tovel it? So Rav Asher Weiss has a beautiful ha'ara in this in his tshuvas in this week's on this week's email that I thought was very satisfactorily answers this question. And he says that, first of all, he says, if Tevilas Kelim is only Drabbanon, it's Machlok, so it's Drabbanon Daraisa, so then, being in this kind of room brings me back to Tevilas Kelim. If it's an issue of Drabbanon or Daraisa, so if it's Drabbanon, there's no way the Drabbanon or Masakin that a person is supposed to do Tevilas Kelim on a kli that will break if you do Tevilas Kelim. So it must be that Rabbanan didn't make a takana in this kind of situation. Now, if it's Din D'Oraisa, not as convincing. In Din D'Oraisa, the Torah may have just said, okay, there's an issue, you're not allowed to use such a kli. But when the Rabbanan were Mesakin Tefillas Kelim, there's no way that they were Mesakin such a thing. But he says, here's his real key. He says, there are two types of things, this relates to Birch Samitzvah a little bit. There are two types of ways to look at something like Tevila, or let's say, Shechita. You could call it a mitzvah, or you could say, no, it's not a mitzvah, it's a matir. What's the difference between a mitzvah and a matir? For instance, to put on tefillin every day, that's a mitzvah. It's not a matir, it doesn't allow me to do anything, it doesn't make anything else. Zrikas hadam on the mizbeach, that allows you to eat the basar hakarban. So that's matir, the basar hakarban. It may also be a mitzvah zrika. It is also a mitzvah zrika. So what is tevila? Is tevila a mitzvah or is it a matir? Is it that there is an iser to use kalim? New kalim purchased from Gayim. And when you tovel them, that's matir the iser? Or do you say no? There's no iser to use new kalim used from Gayim. There's a mitzvah to tovel new kalim used from Gayim, but it's not that there's an iser. Shechita is definitely a matir. Why shechita a matir? What's the iser before you do shechita? Eivim Menachai, Nevela, if you kill it, right? It's going to go from Eivim Menachai straight to Nevela if you don't do Shechita, right? So the only way to make it go from Eivim Menachai to kosher is by doing Shechita. Shechita is definitely a matir. It may also be a mitzvah, but it's definitely a matir. So, l'may nafkamina, whether something is a... So, tevila, you can look at it in two ways, as a mitzvah or a matir. So, Rav Asher Weiss suggests that he has rayas that tevila is a mitzvah. It's not a matir. It's a mitzvah, not a matir. Tzitzis. Is tzitzis a mitzvah or a matir? What am I even talking about? How could tzitzis be a matir? Matir the beged, right? A beged of dal kanfos that would otherwise be asur to wear. So we just say that the beged is a chefta shalisser, and then you put on tzitzis, it becomes matir the beged? Or you say, no, when you have a beged of dal kanfos, you have a mitzvah to put tzitzis on the beged. So tzitzis seems to be a mitzvah, it's not a matir. Right, it's a mitzvah to put on the beged that has dal kanfos. You have to put on tzitzis. If you don't put on tzitzis, it may be that as a result of the fact that you didn't do that, what's the iser? The iser is the bittul mitzvah saseh, that you didn't do the mitzvah. But it's not that there's a separate iser called dal kanfos below tzitzis. It's just a separate mitzvah saseh. It's just a bittul mitzvah saseh. So says Rav Asher Weiss as follows. L'may nafkamina between whether something's a matir or a mitzvah. Well, he doesn't say, I'll give you one nafkamina, it's just good yudias in general. There's a Tosfos Nida daf samach vav, where Tosfos discusses I'm glad I said that we should be doing mezuzah right now, but there's a Tosfos Nida daf samach vav, where Tosfos discusses the following issue. There is a halacha when a woman goes to the mikvah, and anybody goes to the mikvah, you know, for real reasons, but especially a woman. Nowadays, it's only nogea to a woman because men don't really have to go to the mikvah nowadays anymore. It's just with the Tosefes Kedusha or whatever, but women actually need to go to a mikvah. There's a halacha that she's not allowed to have a chatzitza inside of her mouth. Even though she's allowed to have a chatzitza, let's say, inside of her stomach, if she ate lunch that day and it hasn't completely gone through her system, it's not a chatzitza when it's inside her stomach, but inside her mouth, she's not allowed to have a chatzitza. There can't be anything because she has to brush her teeth, floss, whatever it is. So the halacha is that she does not have to open her mouth when she's in the mikvah. She just isn't allowed to have a chatzitza there. Water doesn't actually have to go there. So the explanation given is that there are three basic parts of the human body. There's the part that's exposed to the outside, which is, you know, your whole torso, back, arms, right? The part that's normally exposed. That part needs water to hit every inch of it. Then there's the part that's sometimes exposed, sometimes not. Well, let's go to the other extreme. There's the part that's never exposed, like your small intestines or large intestines, or anything that's completely inside your body, your heart, your liver, your kidneys, all of those things, hopefully are never exposed. And those things are allowed to have a chatzitza. If you had an operation and they had to sew something up on the inside, those stitches are not a chatzitza. If you have food going through your digestive tract, that's not a chatzitza because there's no problems of chatzitza on the part that's never exposed. But then there's the in-between area. Parts that are sometimes exposed, sometimes not exposed, like inside your mouth, bottom of your nose, armpits, you know, parts like that that are sometimes exposed, sometimes not. Eyelids, because and inside the eyes, sometimes you open your eyes, sometimes you close your eyes, so they're sometimes exposed, sometimes not exposed. Those parts are not allowed to have a chatzitza, but you don't need the water to actually hit those parts. And the Gemara says, where do we know this from? It's just like the rule, kolaroy lebila in bilama kevesbo. Just like the rule by a carbon mincha that you need flour and oil, enough oil to mix all the to get all the flour wet in the carbon mincha. But even if you don't actually mix around to get all the flour wet, as long as you have enough oil to get the flour wet, it would still be a kosher carbon. So the basis starts is like that. You don't actually need the bias maim, but you need that if she were to allow the water to go in her mouth, then it would hit every spot, that there wouldn't be a chatzitza there. But you don't actually need that to happen. Just like the carbon mincha. So ask Tosfos Nida Daf Samach about the following question. By a carbon mincha, there's a mitzvah to do belila. You have a requirement to actually mix the flour and the oil together. It's a mitzvah to do belila. By a woman going to the mikvah, you will never hear a woman tell you that when she went to the mikvah, well, most women don't talk about it, but you will never hear someone say that when a woman goes to the mikvah, she has to open up her mouth and her eyes and close her eyes in order to make sure that the water goes in all of the beis hastarim. You will never hear such a thing. If there's a mitzvah lechatchila to do the belila and the tevila is patterned after the belila, why isn't there a mitzvah lechatchila to let the water come into the beis hastarim? Says Tosfos. Because there's a fundamental difference. When it comes to the carbon mincha, the belila is a mitzvah. When it comes to the tevila of a woman who wants to become Uteris Labaila, it's not a mitzvah, it is a matir. And by a matir, there's no such thing as l'chadchila and b'diavad. By a matir, there's one question you have to ask at the end of the day. Did it become mutter? Did it not become mutter? There's no, oh, well, l'chadchila, you're supposed to do it this way, b'diavad. There's no l'chadchila and b'diavad. By a mitzvah, you can say, okay, there's the best way to do the mitzvah, then there's the second best way to do the mitzvah. By a matir, there's no such discussion. Is it mutter or isn't it mutter? That's it. There's no l'chadchila, best way, second best. That's the definition. That's one nafkamina between a mitzvah and a matir. But says Rav Asher Weiss, there's another very important nafkamina. And that is, there's a concept called Anus Rachmana Patre. What does Anus Rachmana Patre mean? That if I wanted to do a mitzvah very badly, but I was honest, there was something that held me back, that it was beyond my capability to do the mitzvah. I couldn't. I was honest. So then I'm patur from going out and doing that mitzvah. Completely patur. I'm not punished for failure to do the mitzvah. It's fine. I'm totally off the hook. Anus Rachmana Patre. Will that work by a matir? Meaning, I was unable to get a lulav and esrog because of some horrible conditions. I was stuck somewhere. All planes were canceled. There was, you know, rainforests in wherever, wherever they get the lovin from in Egypt, where, you know, the Egyptian border guards just chopped off the tops of all the lovin. There are no lovin to be had. Anus Rachmana Patre. Right? Certainly works. You would imagine, I'm not going to go up after 120 years and God's going to say, that 1 year you missed lulav, sorry, you know, see ya, whatever. I'm not gonna be sent down, I would imagine, for that. Anus Rachmana Patre. You say I'm an anus and therefore I'm pater. What if I can't do shchita on the animal because I don't have any kosher shchita knives? I really don't want to eat salad for lunch again, so I'd really like to have meat. But there's no kosher shchita knives, and I looked all over the place for kosher shchita knives. So you can say, Anus Rachmana Patre. I could just take a bite out of the live animal and enjoy, if that's how I enjoy it. You know, or burn it first, you know, cook it first and then enjoy it. Enjoy it as a nevela. Would you say such a thing? Obviously not, right? You don't say Anus Rachmana Patre on something that's a, you don't say Anus Rachmana Patre, I'm just keep looking because I'm afraid someone wants to come to Shir. You don't say Anus Rachmana Patre on a matir. If it never became mutter, it never became mutter. If it's still nevelo or still Eber Min HaChai, it never became mutter. Nothing to talk about. So it says Rav Asher Weiss, Tevilas Kalim is a mitzvah. It's not a matir. And therefore, as a mitzvah, you say Anas Rachmana Patre. If you can't do tvila on this kli because it will break the kli, you're an anus. Mimela, you're pater from the mitzvah of tvila. We know you're not allowed to use a kli before you do tvila, so isn't it an isser? So he says, no, the isser is a knas for those who fail to do the mitzvah. It's the Rabbanan said, we're going to punish you for failing to do the mitzvah, we're going to make the kli usser until you do the mitzvah. But it's a function of it being a mitzvah. Tevilah is not a function of the isser of the kli. The isser of the kli is a function of the mitzvah of tevilah. And he has a gevaldik arai, and this is what made me think of it when I saw the Magen Avraham. He has a gevaldik arai from Hilchos Tzitzis. Siman Yud Gimel, says the Ramah, if a person is wearing a beged that has dalet kanfos and no tzitzis, what do you do? Beged, dalet kanfos, no tzitzis, you realize, I took my kids bowling the other day, I saw when Daniel was bowling that the two back ends of his tzitzis were hanging down, except there were no tzitzis on either of the back ends. It was just two corners hanging down. So you realize that you're wearing dalet kanfos, but you're not wearing tzitzis. So what do?
Take it off.
You gotta take it off right away. What if it's Shabbos? Says the Rama, well, why should it make it, right? I would think, why should it make a difference? You're still not allowed to wear a beged of dalet kanfos without tzitzis. You gotta take it off. Says the Rama, if it's Shabbos, you're allowed to leave it on. Why? What are you supposed to do? Tie tzitzis on them? On Shabbos? It's an Isser of Kosher. It's an Isser of Daraisa. Anus Rachmana Patre. We know there's an Isser to wear a beged of dalet kanfos without tzitzis. That Isser is only a function of the mitzvah. You're not allowed to wear a beged of dalet kanfos without tzitzis because you have to put tzitzis on a beged of dalet kanfos. That's why you're not allowed to wear a beged of dalet kanfos without tzitzis. When you don't have that mitzvah, because Anus Rachmana Patre, it's Shabbos, you can't violate kosher. Mimela, Anus Rachmana Patre, and you can leave the beged on. Now, lahalacha, it happens to be the Magen Avraham says, you do have to take it off, because he says, you should have put tzitzis on Friday, so we make a knas mid rabbanon for failure to do that. It says Rav Asher Weiss, even according to the Magen Avraham, what are you going to say to the guy who didn't tovel his George Foreman grill? What? You should have done it on yesterday and then it wouldn't have broken? It wouldn't have broken no matter what day you did it. So we should go back to the din of the Ramah, Anus Rachmana Patre, Mele doesn't require tevila. That was a gevaldika raya. Much happier with that than the Chalkas Yaakov. Yeah.
Just a small technical question on that.
Yeah.
But didn't we see in the Magen Avraham last year that even when you fix, last week, that even when you fix a sitzis,
I was like, I don't even remember. Yeah.
You have to take off the sitzis when you fix it. So even if you were to fix sitzis, you wouldn't do it while you're wearing it, you would take it off first.
Ah.
Shouldn't it kick in once the garment is off?
Right. So the Magen Avraham must understand in a global sense that since there is this built-in knas that you should have taken care of it already, the way they formulated that knas is never be caught dead for a set, or you know, never be caught for a second with a beged without tzitzis. But yeah, but ein achinami. According to the Ramah, there should be no reason to do that. There should be no reason to take it off. You should be able to leave it on. According to this Ramah that Rav Asher Weiss is quoting. So I thought that's the best excuse ever not to tovel electrical appliances. He doesn't have great. Rav Asher Weiss doesn't bring a lot of rayas, you know, to the fact that Tefilas Kalim is a mitzvah, not a matir, or to like, you know, but still, it's like, in terms of the lumdus of it, is beautiful. Then he writes, of course, that Rav Chaim Kanievsky and Rav Yashiv, that's a different shuva. He writes that I've seen a lot of posts come talk about Tefilas Kalim, I've never seen anyone say this, and all I've really seen is people say that you're chayiv to tovel it, so even though I'm really 100% sure that I'm right, he says, I'm not going to have the chutzpah to go against every other posik in the world. So better to just sell it to a guy and borrow it from him for the rest of your life. And that way it's still the guy's kli. Okay. And he said, that's a harama, that's a joke. He says, yeah, but I'm really right anyway. So, you know, you just, you combine that with the harama and that's okay. All right. So anyway, back to mezuzah. So that was that wasn't the Magen Avraham, but that's what the Magen Avraham reminded me of last time. Now, Rabbi Kiveger, we saw also, Rabbi Kiveger has this comment where he says he also seems to assume that mezuzah chavas hadar is to be taken very literally. It's only on the person who actually lives in the house that's chayiv in putting up a mezuzah. In what context? Rabbi Kiveger had this astonishing chiddush quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva that if you leave your house, whenever you leave your house, you got to put up, you got to make a new brach on the mezuzah when you come back in. You leave for a couple of days, you come back because it was left empty. There was no door. There's no one living in the house. So we pointed out that the author of the Pesachei Tshuva in his Sefer Nachlas Tzvi, which is in source number 6 over here, says, you know, b'mechilas kvodo, I love Rabbi Kiveger, but Chazal tell you that lo yomar a talmud hevanti v'hu lo hevin, that a talmud is not allowed to say I understand when in fact you don't understand. You should, if you don't understand, you're supposed to say I don't understand. Can you explain again, please? You're not supposed to claim that you understand. So says Nachlas Tzvi, I'm just a talmud. But gam anochi lo evosh mi lomar lo hevanti. But what can I say? I have to listen to Chazal. I have to tell you, I don't understand what on God's green earth Rabbi Kiveger is talking about. Because, he says, Rabbi Kiveger brings a raya from another Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham is docha, a raya from the Arizal. The Arizal says that you're supposed to go wear talis katan even at night. You're supposed to wear tzitzit even at night. And the Arizal's raya is from a very famous Gemara Menachos, where the Gemara tells us that David HaMelech was once in the Beis HaMerchatz, and he looked around in the Beis HaMerchatz, and he realized he doesn't have tzitzis, there's no mezuzah in the Beis HaMerchatz, he doesn't have any mitzvos, and he started getting upset that he doesn't have any mitzvos. And then he saw the mitzvah of Mila, that's always with him, so it made him feel better that he had the mitzvah of Mila with him. So says the Arizal, why didn't he just get upset every single night when he was walking down the street that he doesn't have tzitzis on? And therefore, you know, have the same, why didn't he have that same epiphany every single night? Why is it dafka in the Beis HaMerchatz? Elamai says, the Arizal, must be that you have to wear tzitzis at night. Okay. Says Magen Avraham, no. He wasn't just upset that he didn't have tzitzis, he was upset that he had no mitzvos. At night, at least he has mezuzah. And at night, at least he has mezuzah. That's why he didn't get upset at night. It's not because you need to wear tzitzis at night. Of course, nighttime you don't need tzitzis. But at least he has mezuzah at night. That's why he was okay. That's what Rabbi Kiveger says from... that's what the Magen Avraham is, Docha the Arizal. Now, says Rabbi Kiveger, if you're going to say that when you're not in your house, you're mekayim the mitzvah of mezuzah, that even when you're outside your house, you're mekayim the mitzvah of mezuzah, well, guess what? In the bathhouse, he also has the mitzvah of mezuzah. Not on the bathhouse, but on his house. Meaning, if you're going to say that there's still an ongoing kiyum mitzvah, even when you leave your house for a couple of days, so even when he's in the Beis HaMerchatz, what's he getting so upset about? He still has mezuzah. He still has mitzvah mezuzah in his house. So says Rabbi Kiveger, must be that when you're in the Beis HaMerchatz, you no longer are being mekayim mitzvah mezuzah in your house. So says Nachlas Tzvi, Eini Maven. I don't understand what he's talking about at all. Why is that not a good raya? You know, what's Rabbi Kiveger's raya? Why wasn't David HaMelech upset that he didn't have a mezuzah, that he wasn't being mekayim? Why was David HaMelech upset, I'm sorry, that he wasn't being mekayim mitzvah mezuzah in the Beis HaMerchatz? What do you mean he's not being mekayim mitzvah mezuzah? He still has a mezuzah in his house, he's just not there right now. So says Rabbi Kiveger, this is a raya that when you're not there, you're not getting a mitzvah. And therefore, when you go back, new bracha. Right? You hear the raya? So why is it a bad raya? So if you look at that Gemara, Gemara doesn't say that, well, let's put it this way. He doesn't quote this, but there's a famous Marach or Zerua in that Gemara. Shachti used to quote all the time, but it's quoted in a lot of Sarmish. See, it's a very famous Marach or Zerua. Marach or Zerua says, what made David HaMelech feel better? Standing there in the Beis HaMerchatz, realizes he doesn't have mezuzah, doesn't have tzitzis. So what does he have? He has Mila. What made him feel better? That he's doing the mitzvah of Mila? No, the mitzvah of Mila was done by his father when he was a week old. And that was it. That mitzvah is over. So how did that make him feel better? Elamai, it's not that David HaMelech was upset that he wasn't being mekayim any mitzvah. And furthermore, all the achronim ask, what about the mitzvah of Emunah b'Hashem? David HaMelech wasn't doing that at the time? He was really arum min ha-mitzvos. He was naked from all mitzvos, as the Gemara says. What about the mitzvah of Emunah b'Hashem? When he walked into the bathhouse, he immediately stopped believing in God? It's impossible. I mean, it's possible, but unlikely. Right? So what's going on? Elamai, what's the real pshat in that Gemara? Not that he wasn't being mekayim any mitzvos, but he had no distinguishing reminders of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. Tzitzis reminds him of tayyong mitzvos. Mezuzah, the Rambam, reminds you, and the Gemara reminds you of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's shmira and love for us. He had no ongoing reminders. And the Mila, not that he's doing a mitzvah of Mila right now, he's not doing a mitzvah of Mila right now. That was done by his father when he was a week old. The Mila is a reminder of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence and his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all the Mila was. So what kind of raya is this? That this is a raya that he's not being mekayim mitzvah mezuzah? He's being mekayim mitzvah mezuzah. But he wasn't in a room with the mezuzah right now. The mezuzah is in a different city. It doesn't help me in terms of the reminder. That's what the Gemara of David HaMelech is all about. So Nachash Tzvi doesn't exactly say that. He doesn't quote that as a rule. But that's probably what he means as his most fundamental reason to reject Rabbi Kivager's raya. There is another way to take that Gemara, by the way. I think we've mentioned in the past, I don't think in the summer, but during the year, the Ragachover was a very unique character, for those who are not familiar. He was a super duper genius. Many of the Gedolei Achronim, Sri Deish, and others say that probably not the best way to go about paskening halacha is to just say, I'll do whatever the Ragachover did. Because like he was so creative and so brilliant that he did things that were sometimes so different. Like the Ragachover would write sometimes, I don't care what the Rambam says, I'm the Ragachover, you know? Like, show me what the Rambam says, show me what Rashi says. You know, he was just very, very, you know, Gemara Rishonim and his own insights. Very, very brilliant. But the Ragachover had a very unique style. And in the Sefer, Ishim Vashitos, which is a great Sefer, it's like a good vacation Sefer, actually. Ishim Vashitos is a Sefer of various Torah personalities from the last 250 years or so. And it's an intellectual biography of them. I mean to say is not so much about when he was 5, he mastered his first Masechta, when he was 7, he was appointed Rosh Yeshiva, or, you know, like none of that stuff. It's more just, this is what he did in learning. This was his style in learning. What made the Netziv different than Reb Chaim in learning? How did they learn differently? And the author of the Sefer Shlomo Yosef Zevin was a gadol yisod olam. He was tremendous. And therefore, he had the bekiyus and the insight to be able to write such a sefer. It's not an easy thing to write. It's actually, case in point, what made the Ragachover style unique? Here, look at these examples and you see a pattern. This is his unique style. Brilliant sefer. He happens to have like a few pages on everybody and like a million pages on the Ragachover because he was a Talmud of the Ragachover. He spent a lot of time with the Ragachover. So one of the things, one of his insights about the Ragachover's Torah is that whereas Reb Chaim made famous the concept of Tzvei Dinim, that there are always two dinim. It's a din in the Gavra, a din in the Chavtza, a din in the Maisa, a din in the Chalos. Right? There's always Tzvei Dinim. The Ragachover always had three dinim. Tzvei, right? Whatever. They don't say it in Yiddish. No, he always had three dinim. A lot of his Shtik Lach Torah always had three dinim. And one of the examples he gives is the mitzvah of Mila. He says, Mila is actually three mitzvahs. There's one mitzvah, an Isser to be an Arel, an Isra of Arelus, and that has its own set of halachas, Karm Pesach, things like that. There's a mitzvah to do, a Maisa Mila, and that's a mitzvah ala Av, when the child is very young. And then there's a third element that a lot of people don't realize, a mitzvah lihios mahul, to be mahul. And Rishonim already talk about that concept of a mitzvah to be mahul. Meaning, if a woman does the Mila, is it a partial key? Meaning, let's say she can't do the Maisa Mila itself, but at least you are now Mahu, and you're definitely not an Arel. So according to the Ragachover, what's going on in the Gemara with David HaMelech? He's not doing a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah his father did when he was a week old. No, says the Ragachover, when he was a week old, his father did the mitzvah, the Maisa mitzvah of doing a Mila. David HaMelech right now is still doing a mitzvah of Liyos Mahu. I mean, for instance, why can't you be Moshech Bar Lasso? There's an issue to be Moshech Bar Lasso, to undo a Mila. There are people that do that, to undo the surgery. They you know, graft some skin or whatever, and they undo the Mila. So why is there such an issue? So number one, it might make you an RL, maybe. You could argue that. But certainly, it's a failure, lihios mahu, to remain mahu. Okay, but anyway, that's the lesser point that I wanted to get out of Nachas Tzvi. Nachas Tzvi then quotes that Rabbi Akiva Eiger, when he says that the guy is out of town, and therefore the house is part of a mezuzah, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, what about his family? His family's in the house. He says, family shmamily. You know, they don't really count. They're just tafel to him, and therefore his chiyuv is the only chiyuv that matters. So says Nachas Tzvi, but wait a second. When the guy's out of town, his house is still being used, even if his family's not there. His house is still being used at least as a storage facility. It's at least being used to store things that he keeps there. Plus, his family are at least like tenants of the house, where the halach is that a tenant is chayv mezuzah every 30 days. So if a house was chayv mezuzah anyway, because there are people that are tenants in the house, so when you then move in and you're chayv midaraisa, even if a socher is only chayv midarabanan, when you move in and the house now becomes chayv midaraisa, you don't make a new bracha. So it says Nachas Tzvi, the author of Pischei Tshuva, I think Rabbi Akiva Eiger is wrong about this. Now, Bein l'Rabbi Akiva Eiger, Bein l'Nachas Tzvi, they're moda that mezuzah is chovas hadar. You know, what I'm trying to point out is Rabbi Akiva Eiger just holds of this chovas hadar to the nth degree. So much so that if you're not living there, pater from mezuzah, the whole mitzvah goes away. Pischei Tshuva, the Nachas Tzvi, says no, it is a chovas hadar, but it doesn't have to be you. Your family living there might also be good enough. Or you living there and going on, you know, occasional vacations is still cool that you're living in the house. That could also be good enough. But everyone would agree that if nobody lives there, that it'll be pater from mezuzah. But that's the sheet of the Ritva. Sheet of Mgvetzes then quotes the sheet of Rabbeinu Yohanan. First actually quotes sheet of Rabbeinu Yohanan. That if a person owns 10 houses and he doesn't live in any of them consistently, he spends a little time in each of them, we discussed this a little bit last time, all of them still need a mezuzah. So, a few ways you could understand this, Rabbeinu Yohanan. A couple of ways you could understand this, and each of which would put Rabbeinu Yohanan for sure against Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Again, he says if you have 10 different houses and you live in each one for just a little bit, all of them need a mezuzah. You're not really living in any of them, they still all need a mezuzah. So one way to understand this is that unlike the Ritva, Rabbeinu Yonason holds that you don't actually need to live in a house to be responsible to put up a mezuzah. In fact, if you look in source 6 Aleph, the Ein Yitzchak, of Yitzchak Elchanan, equates Rabbeinu Yonason with a sheet of Nemuka Yosef. When Rabbeinu Yosef says that if you own a rental property that is currently vacant, you're an owner of you have a house for rent that no one has rented yet, Rabbeinu Yosef holds you have to keep a mezuzah on its door, because even though you don't live there, you might visit occasionally. So what does that tell you? That Rabbeinu Yosef doesn't take chovas hadar very seriously. That's not really a chiv on the person living there, it's really a chiv on the person who owns it. Elamai, when you living there would trump ownership. But if nobody lives there, so then it falls back onto the owner. That's what Nemuka Yosef must understand. But it's not a chiyuv on the person who lives there necessarily. So says Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, even the Ritva, who does not require a mezuzah, in the case where you have the 10 different houses, would reject Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Now certainly Rabbeinu Yohanan, who does require a mezuzah when you don't live in any of the houses, obviously would reject Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger thinks you go out for 2 days. You don't need a mezuzah anymore. But even the Ritva would reject Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Why? The only time you're part of a mezuzah is in that case where you have 10 homes and you live in none of them. So none of them is your bias. The case of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, though, was what? You have a house, you just left on a business trip. But if someone asks you, home address, you know exactly what to answer. You have a very clear, distinct home address. So therefore, the Ritva might say, when you have 10 homes, and therefore you have no home address because you're never home, you're always in a different spot every other day, so then it could be that you're not going to be chayv mezuzah in any of those places. But he's not going to be moded or b'kiv eger necessarily. That if you leave your home for a couple of days, that you're going to all of a sudden the home is going to be pater from mezuzah. So the Ritva says Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, the Ritva it does not line up with Rabbi Akiva Eiger. You may also suggest that Rabbeinu Yohanan's son, again, what would Rabbeinu Yohanan say? 10 different homes, you need a mezuzah, and you only visit them occasionally, you need a mezuzah in all of them. It could be Rabbeinu Yohanan's son will still hold of Chavos Hadar, that there still is a concept of Chavos Hadar, and that he's not like the Nemuka Yosef about a vacant. Maybe Rabbeinu Yohanan will say, you have a vacant rental property, you don't need a mezuzah there, no one's living there. Of course mezuzah is a Chavos Hadar. Aye, why then if you have 10 homes, do you need to put a mezuzah in all 10 of them? No, what's the Svara? What? You live in all 10. When you have a vacant rental property, you don't live in it. No one lives in it. You have 10 homes, you live in all 10. We all have 10 homes because we have 10 rooms in our homes. Roughly, whatever. We have. So having all those rooms, what? You can say, I don't live in any of them. Because I eat in the kitchen, I sleep in the bedroom, I do different things. I live in the living room, I dine in the dining room, I do all sorts of different things in all these different rooms. I TV in the TV room. So, I don't live in any of them? No, the teretz is, you live in all of them. Right? So it could be that Rabbeinu Yonah's son is not at all like the Nemuka Yosef, and this concept of Chavos Hadar is a real bona fide concept that we have to accept, that without a person living in the home, there's no Chiv Mezuzah. Okay, that's just the lumdus of where the Chiv comes from. Now let's talk about, once we talk about living, that you're only Chiv Mezuzah if you live in the house, so what's called living there? What if I just store things there? Is that called living? Right, when I stay there, it's certainly called living there. When I eat there and sleep there, what if I do business there? Is that called living there? So this is, I assume the Mar Makomos most of you were going through. Shulchan Aruch in Resh Pei Vav Sif Aleph, Paskins, that Otzros Yayin and Otzros Shemen, and, you know, cattle stables, chicken coops, all those places require a mezuzah. Now, we have to explain exactly why that should be the case. And is that true of any otzar? No matter what you store anywhere, it's always going to be chayv mezuzah just because it's used for storage. Let's say, you know, on Rockaway Turnpike, they have these big facilities just for storage where you could just, like, rent a room, I guess. I never went in there, but, you know, get the first 3 days free when they're running a promotion, apparently, according to the sign. And like, long-term storage, just leave something there. Do you put a mezuzah on that? I'm, you know, relocating to a different state. I moved out of my house, stayed by my parents for a couple of months. I just need a place to store everything. So this stuff is going to be stored there for 3 months. So I need to put a mezuzah there. I'm renting the property. When I rent a house in Chutz Laretz for 3 months, I do need to put a mezuzah there, right? So is it mamish called living that you need to put a mezuzah there? So we need to explain a little bit what storage facility is all about. So now, if we were to take this concept of storage completely literally, that whenever you store something anywhere, you chayv mezuzah, so we were discussing before that Magen Avraham, that if you put, that you're not supposed to put up the mezuzah before you move in, because mezuzah is chavas hadar. What if I moved in a bunch of stuff to the house, but I'm not moving in for another couple of weeks? Can I put up a mezuzah then? So if you say that storage facility is called living, you use it for storing things, it's called living, well, I put all my stuff in there, so isn't it at least being used for storage, and therefore, shouldn't it require a mezuzah? So that is not so pashut, because remember, we had such a svara that even if something is chayv mezuzah in its own right, would be chayv mezuzah as a storage facility, but if it's not meant to be a storage facility, and it's being underutilized, then it's not going to be chayv mezuzah until it's utilized for what it's meant to be utilized for. That's a possible svar you could suggest. When I have a storage facility that's used as a storage facility, good, I'll put a mezuzah there. This would be very no-get at garages, by the way. So I'll put a mezuzah there. But when I have a house, a living room, and all it's being, well, living rooms mostly are just used to keep the couches, but if I have a kitchen, and all it's being used is to store a bunch of boxes, well then it's being severely underutilized. That's not its highest, you know, calling, and therefore maybe it's going to be part of the mezuzah. Where do we have such a svara? So remember, we had earlier in the summer, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, the Rush Paskins, that the Gemara says that a house that doesn't have a roof is part of the mezuzah. I frecked the Rush, what about Chatzeros and Sharei Ayaros? What about all these places? Shari Chatzeros is really all he asks about, right? The gate, the courtyard, the gate into your courtyard, that requires a mezuzah. There's no roof over anybody's front yard. So why is the chayv a mezuzah? So what did the Rosh say? A very similar svara. That when it's meant to be used with a roof, good, then it needs a roof in order to be chayv a mezuzah. If your living room doesn't have a roof, you're potter from mezuzah. But a front yard is not supposed to have a roof. So it's being used as at its maximum capacity of what it, you know, what it could be used for, which is as a yard, as an open, airy space without a roof. Mela, that's good enough. You only need the roof when it's meant to be, when it's the kind of room that really needs a roof in order to be functional. When that's what its calling is, that's what it's meant to do. Very similar svara. When do we say storage facility is chayiv? Only when the storage facility is what it's meant to be used for. Another similar svara. Shulchan Aruch Paskin is a shul that doesn't have a living quarters. We discuss shuls, right? Is going to be pata from mezuzah if it doesn't have an apartment attached to the shul. Understand? Shul is used to store sidurim, chumashim, tables, chairs, bima, aron, sifrei Torah, lots of really good stuff. Silver things on the tops of the sifrei Torah. It stores all these things. So should it, forget about no one lives there. Shouldn't it be chayv mezuzah because it's a storage facility? Elamai, what's the svara? A storage facility is chayv mezuzah when it's meant to be a storage facility. If it's not supposed to be a storage facility, it's supposed to be something better, then the fact that it also stores things doesn't make it chayv mezuzah. Based on that, we could go back to the Nachas Tzvi we said before. Nachas Tzvi didn't like Rabbi Akiva Eiger, right? So he had a lot, I mean, didn't like Rabbi Akiva Eiger's shita about when you leave the house that you put from mezuzah. So he had a lot of issues with it. One of his issues was, I don't understand. Even if you leave the house and the house is totally empty, unless you move all your stuff out of the house, your house is still being used as a storage facility. How could you say, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that when you leave your house for 5 days, 2 days, whatever, that your house is going to be put from mezuzah when you come back in, you need to make a new bracha? When you leave your house, granted, nobody's living there, but your stuff is living there. It's being stored there, and a storage facility is chayv mezuzah. Beis hayayin, beis hashemen. You have oil, you have wine in your house. So it should be chayv mitam storage facility. So even if Rabbi Akiva Eiger can't get out of the other kashas on him, this kasha seems like he can get out of fairly easily based on what we said. Rabbi Akiva Eiger will say, no, a din of a storage facility only kicks in when that is the purpose of that room. Your home is meant for a human family to live there. It's not meant as a storage facility. And therefore, the fact that it's included in storage is not going to be mechayiv in a mezuzah. Right? That's how this may help us understand Rabbi Akiva Eiger. It will also help us understand where hopefully we get to later in the week when we discuss stores. A place of business. Shulchan Aruch Paskin and Resh Pei Vav Sif Yud, that stores don't need a mezuzah. So Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Sefer Yada Katana, who says, wait, why do stores not need a mezuzah? Every store has inventory. Except for like the app store. But like, you know, in the olden days, stores would have actual inventory. They would sell things that you can hold and feel. And so if that's the case, it's at least a storage facility. So if it's a storage facility, shouldn't it be chayv mezuzah mitam storage facility? Elamai, what's the answer again? Davar pashut. This svar has got to be true, right? It answers all these questions. A store is not meant to be a storage facility. It's meant as a place of business. It has a higher calling than a storage facility. Maybe it's not going to be chayv mitam storage facility. Yeah.
Shifts to becoming a storage facility because you're still going to lock the door and everything because, like, you have a house really to watch your stuff because you're not there a lot of the time. So, like, maybe especially when you're away from your house, like, the primary use of the house.
I hear the svara, but I think, like, if you still ask the person, what's the house for? No one would ever think, I use my house to watch my stuff. I use my house so that when, you know, if I have to come back from vacation. You know, A, it would be a hassle to sell every time I leave. But if I have to come back from vacation, I it's my home. It's my place to go. It's my home base. It's where I belong. So I think even when you're away, the house is still, it's still yours. It's hard. It's, I don't really see it as shifting to a storage. I mean, that's exactly the kasha that the Nachlas Tzvi asks, that it's become a storage facility, so it's still chayav mezuzah. Right? That's the Nachlas Tzvi's kasha in Riki Vager. But I think this teretz works, that it's not a storage facility, and it never was meant to be one, and if it's being used as one, it's being underutilized to the point that it's not going to be chayav mezuzah. It has to be used for what it's meant to be used for, to be chayav mezuzah. That's one type of story. Yeah, was I clear? You still disagree, but clear. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. That's one type of storage facility. The other type of storage facility. So the Shulchan Aruch is explicit. Yayin, Shemen, Bakar. There is a Gemara in Yuma, though, Daf Yud Aleph, that talks about a base ha'etzim u'base ha'teven. The place where you keep your firewood and your straw, things like that, grain, cattle, wood. And there's machlokas in the Gemara whether it requires mezuzah or not. So Gemara goes back and forth a little bit, but it seems that Rabbi Yehuda holds that if women use that room for other things, to put on perfume and jewelry and get themselves dressed and made up or whatever, so then it's going to be chayiv mezuzah. Not so much because of the storage, mitam storage shabbat, but because the women use it also as a normal living thing, where they get their makeup on or whatever. So that's enough to be mechayiv mezuzah. And Rav Kahana paskins that no, it's going to be patur from mezuzah, even if women use it for these other purposes. So how do we paskin halach lemaisa? What do the poskim say? So the Rif and the Rosh and Siman Tes Vav, right? Both paskin like Rav Kahana. That you chayiv mezuzah whether Rav Kahana said that it's always gonna, no, the other way, that it's always gonna be chayiv mezuzah, right? Rav Kahana said it's always gonna be chayiv mezuzah even if women don't use it, just as a storage facility, beis ha'etz and beis ha'teven, is always gonna be chayiv mezuzah. So the Rif and the Rush passed like Rav Kahana that it's chayiv mezuzah. Fine. The Rambam passed like Rav Yehuda that only if it's also used for something but storage is it going to be chayiv mezuzah. Now, wait a second. A couple of things we're going to have to figure out over here. First of all, what are they arguing about? Like, what's the kudus ha-machlokas? But even more importantly, we just got through saying that yayin, shemen, when you store a whole bunch of things, it's definitely chayiv. And now, all of a sudden, we talk about eitzim and teven, and we're not so sure that it's chayiv anymore? What difference does it make what you're storing? If it's meant for storage, so it's meant for storage. Why shouldn't it matter what you're storing in there? That's one. The other thing we're going to figure out is, it's very weird, the breakdown of the Rishonim. The Rif and the Rush are on one side and the Rambam's on the other side? That almost never happens. It's always the Rush is the one on the outside looking in and the Rif and the Rambam are on the other side. So what's going on here in the Machlokas Rishonim? And what's I think I mentioned this, but why would you paskin one way or the other? What would lead you to paskin like Rav Kahana? What would lead you to paskin like Rav Yehuda? So Kesef Mishnah says that the Nekudas HaMachlokas between the Rosh and the Rambam is not a Svara at all. Nothing to do with Svara. Fascinating Ha'ara, the Kesef Mishnah. He says, if you look at the Gemara tells us, when Rav Kahana speaks, Tani Rav Kahana Kameid Rav Yehuda. Keep in mind, it's Machlokas Rav Kahana and Rabbi Yehuda. But Tani Rav Kahana Kameid Rav Yehuda. What does that mean? Rav Kahana was speaking in front of Rabbi Yehuda. That implies, or might imply, that Rabbi Yehuda is the Rebbe and Rav Kahana is the Talmud. If that's true, Rabbi Yehuda is the Rebbe and Rav Kahana is the Talmud, forget about Svaras. Before we go to Svaras, there are Klalei Apsak. We have Einalach Kiyachar Makam Arabim, Beisil Beishavim, Pasan Beisilal. Rabbi Yossi Nimuko Imo, we have a whole bunch of klalei psak. One klal in psak is ein halacha ketalmid b'makom harav. You don't pass like a talmid against his own rebbe. So if that's a klal in psak, and Rav Kahana in fact was a talmid of Rabbi Yehuda, so now you understand the Rambam shita. You got to pass like Rabbi Yehuda. On the other side of things, the Rush and the Rif might assume that no, Rav Kahana was just speaking in front of Rav Yehuda, but he wasn't a Talmud of Rav Yehuda. He just happened to have been speaking in front of him. What's interesting, though, and needs to be looked into, maybe I'll just mention this. We'll close with this, and we'll start with this again tomorrow. But is this idea that the Kesef Mishnah says "Ein alach talmid makom harav" is directly against another klal in psak halacha, and that is that we have a klal in psak hilchsa kibasrei, that we always pass on like the latest generation, because we assume that the later generations are the midgets standing on the shoulders of the giants. That even they're not greater than the previous generations, but they knew everything the previous generations had, and then they built on that. So it could be, yeah. No, even when it's against it, Hilchsukabasra is when you're going against earlier opinions. We always go like the later one.
At the same time,
but one is a junior associate and one is a...
Those two are always then going to be in contradiction.
Okay, good. Right, they're always going to be... So what's the teretz? Meaning, they're always going to be contradiction, so what's the teretz? So maybe you could say Hilchsukabasra is only when they never saw each other, but why? Why is that? So if the whole svar of Hilchus Kabasrai is that the Rebbe is really greater than I am, right? It's just that I'm building off of what he said, but if he's still around when I'm building it, I'm not building off of what he said. He's greater than I am and he's telling me I'm wrong. So if he's still around and I'm saying it, then you can't say Hilchus Kabasrai. I can't be building off of what he said. He's right here. Let him build off of it or not build off of it and tell me I'm wrong. And if he tells me I'm wrong, then I'm wrong. So that's when you say Malkamarav. So that's why this Rav Kahana Kamed Rav Yehuda may be important. All right, we'll stop there for tonight.